Today, so there's a couple of things maybe if you would, I'll do a checklist of what we're not going to do over the next hour. Tell you how to do microchurch. Just so you know, is that there's some cost to being told how to do something that can really be lost in the case of micro. I'm not going to try to sell you or convince you to do microchurch. I actually think that the Spirit is pretty good at convincing you to nudging you in a direction. We should try to be obedient, which will be good, and so we'll walk in that. And then you're not necessarily going to leave with a whole bunch of answers that I give, but hopefully some nudges that you've heard from your table and as we process today. And so, just simply, I'm going to give a little bit of background in this. So this is Microchurch 101. I have Scott Wohler. My wife and I, we planted Corner Church just over 20 years ago. And so when it's divisible by 10, twice, I guess it gets to be. I had a one-year-old and a three-year-old when we planted, and I'm an empty nester now. And so life moves. Corner Church, we planted in the core of downtown Minneapolis 20 years ago. Our passion, our vision from day one was to do human scale church. I think micro church is a name that was given by somebody who's never been to or done a micro church. sometimes it can have a connotation. Some people think this is nice, but some people say, oh, look, you're so cute. You're a micro church. And like, that's... could be offensive. You know, if somebody comes up to you and goes, you're so huge, you're huge, it might, could be offensive as well. So the thing about, we wanted to do human scale church, and we felt passionate about being within walking distance as we were launching in the city. And so our passion, our mission, our calling as Corner Church is to see a corner church, and then I'll talk about this little thing as well, but a corner church and a valued in community business within walking distance of everybody in the urban dense parts of our city. And not to grow by doing larger auditoriums, but by doing more churches that people can walk to. Seeing church as something that you should do with your neighbors, do with your community, not necessarily jump in a car and go to where other people live or reside. And so some of the heart in that is that if you are reaching out to people who are not church kids or church and cultured people, people that are not alienated, separated, disenfranchised, disgruntled towards the church, if you're just somebody who doesn't necessarily have church background and you say, you should come to church sometime, and you say, perfect, I guess I could do that, and say, if you could, it's like a 40-minute drive. That just wasn't our thing. And so for us, I'll talk just like 3 minutes about this because there's a million ways, and that's one of the strengths of microchurch. For us, we have local independent community coffee shops that function Monday through Saturday, and our coffee shops are all closed on Sunday, and we have church in all of our coffee shops on Sunday. The value of that, it's not just economic. It's actually economic is such a really small piece of it, and I'll take a moment to speak about that later. But the missional end of it is humongous, is that right now, I mean, we have a sixth coffee shop right now in the lobby or whatever the building here is downstairs right now. But right now, there are probably in our spaces, probably 300 or 400 people in our coffee shops right now. If you go, this is not to about this church, but we did drop off our stuff on Wednesday afternoon here. And this is a big church. I don't know if there probably was school happening, but we came in and it was like the door was locked and it was just quiet and empty. And our thing is, if we're going to have infrastructure or facility, it's going to be used to dust, to be a valuable part of our community, as opposed to just something that is locked and sits and opens up like a football stadium or something like that. And so, everybody needs one of these guys. If you could kind of pass and spread these out. I'm a processing person. I'm also there's Sharpies, or if you need a pen, I don't have any pens. I have a Sharpie. Somehow it makes it makes it feel better. But our goal again is to process today. And we're going to ask, the room is going to talk a bunch here. I'm sorry, I've just talked so far. But the thing that I'm going to do, we're going to do this three times. Once will be me, once will be one of you up here. And then you'll do this as a table together surrounding your own communities. But this is 94. That Sharpie wasn't very good. Interstate 94. This is 35W. This is the Mississippi River. It's as pretty exact a scale. But this right here is downtown Minneapolis. Okay? That's downtown Minneapolis. And so, again, I'm going to do this once. We're going to have one other person do this. But I want to just think about it. Downtown Minneapolis is not one neighborhood. Just so you know that, if you think about wherever you are, and I want you to just start jamming this in your brain. If you just say, you know what, we're going to do it at church. Bloomington. Bloomington is not one community. In fact, if you go on the other side of whatever that road there, it's very different than you go over here. And roads are like lit. There could be walls. Could be walls. People go towards their where they work, or they go towards their stores, and they might be one block away from something else, and they go, I've never even been over here before. You've lived here for 20 years. But just think a little bit about downtown Minneapolis. There's the North Loop neighborhood over here, which is interesting, is that Washington runs right through here, Washington Avenue. And so on this side, this is where the Star Tribune factory used to be, the printing factory. But this is lots of young professionals and empty nesters. And over in this corner of the North Loop is where there is so much services to the unhoused. And so in the North Loop neighborhood, there's a community here and a community here and a community here that are radically distinctly different. And I can walk from this corner to this corner walk in about 4 minutes. Now, we actually have a corner church and a corner coffee right there just off of Washington. But the thing is that how we vision, how we passionate is that what if there was a church for each of those communities? They're so distinct. Now you come over here, this is the Mill District. This is where the Guthrie is at. And so this side by the waterfall is such, it's its own unique community. If you go right here, and this spot right here, there's one of the largest transitional housing. It's called Sharing and Caring Hands. It's right here, People Serving People is right here. And this is, there's a lot of industrial right there, but there are high-rise housings up and down Washington here. And so I grew up in Upsala, Minnesota. Everybody's been to Upsala. I can see. If you Wikipedia Upsala, there are about 150 housing units in Upsala, 400 people in Upsala. And so I live right here, and on my block, there are 400 housing units. And so we say, in Upsala, Gethsemane Lutheran Church, the Community Covenant Church, Catholic Church, and then there's one more Lutheran church that sprang after when the ELCU world. And so there are four churches, 150 households. My block has over 400 houses on my block where we live. And so just, again, starting to process this a little bit. Now, I could continue to go in this, but I would say the thing that we want to really focus on in this is that if you'd say, you know what? Church for young professionals, they're tough to reach out to. They have so much stuff. And people that are unhoused, how will that ever be sustainable? Mill District down by the Guthrie, this is some of the most expensive housing in downtown Minneapolis. And some would say, again, quite liberal, not looking for church. We should cross them out. Over here by North Central University, it's so incredibly diverse. Well, this group right over here, there's so many people that are weren't born in the United States. There's some language issues. We should cross them out. Down Chicago, there's some safety issues that people would have perception, so we probably shouldn't be there. Convention Center. Down Nicollet here. I don't know, people that are moving. The thing that I want you to think about is that it's so easy in the church world to go, can't plant there. And so this is, let me say some words, maybe you won't get it, but just because somebody doesn't want your boiled hot dog and your wagon concert doesn't mean they're hard to reach. Don't write that down. I'll say it one more time. Don't write it down. But just because somebody doesn't want your wagon concert and your boiled hot dog doesn't mean it's hard to reach. I think that globally, and for sure in the United States, that we, when we think about church planting, we say it's big budget. We've got to have about $100,000 to $300,000. We got to have a lot of people. We've got to have a team of 100 to 150. And we got to have a building that'll seat between 1 to 300 people. Now, these things, if you'd say, all right, this corner of downtown Minneapolis, lots of new Americans, lots of people that have grown up Muslim. There are lots of people that don't speak English first language. You say, all right, find a space that seats 150 to 250 people. No. Find a team, 200, 300 people, that will join your team to be 50 people that'll join your team to launch here in Elliott Park. I want you to grab here. Let's have one person. Let's see. Let's think about, well, Kathy, come on, Piper. So this will be a little bit different. This will be good for our exercise, our process here. And so come on up to the board here. And so when you're planting, I'll draw and you talk.
Okay.
So you're thinking about doing a church. Who's it for?
Families with disabilities.
Okay. So we've got some families. All right. Perfect. This sounds like already a winning formula. Families. Okay. Perfect. And so you said another word at the end there. I didn't quite hear it. What was it again?
Disabilities.
Families with disabilities. Families with disabilities. And so, all right, if you are going to, what are some of the challenges of building a big team for families with disabilities? What's a challenge for building a big team?
People that have a passion for disabilities.
Wait. Doesn't everybody have a passion for?
No.
Oh, okay. No. So. It's good. So, okay, that's good. Okay, so what about, money's always easy. Money is always, so you could probably, what would make money complicated with doing ministry to family with
disabilities?
Yeah.
Because families with disabilities usually don't have money either.
Wow, okay. Okay, so.
They have more plates they're spinning than anything else.
Wow. Well. Okay. And okay, well, what about space is so simple. We've talked about this. It's like, I don't know, especially, I don't know if you came up here. How many of you came up the stairs here to the, right now? Okay, perfect. There was an elevator. Have you ever been in a building where you have to like, oh, it's accessible, but you actually have to go down to, you know, 494? And so what makes facility complicated?
Well, just even... like even thinking about how many people, how many buildings, even public buildings, have an area where you could change an adult in diapers with disabilities. Thinking about that. I mean,
yeah.
It's not just kids with disabilities.
Yes.
It's just people, adults.
Yep. So you may say, well, there's an elevator. Done. Check. You just heard. It's complicated. So I want you on at your table, if everybody's got one of these. So the blacked out map. In a community that you would have passion to plant in, I'm literally going to give you 90 seconds to write down some of the reasons why no one would ever plant there. Why no one would ever plant there. And then we're going to talk as a table a little bit. So in this blacked out, thank you so much. So why? Think of a community. You say, I don't really have a community, but think of it. Maybe even where you live right now. Why no one would want to, what are the restrictions, the challenges to planting a church where you're thinking about planting? So again, 90 seconds and we're going to talk. The clock is already ticking, so I hope you're already writing. So you have about 80 seconds now to jot down what are the challenges of planting where you are thinking. All right. Now I want you to just go as a table for a moment. Let part of the fuel of your conversation be, again, if you're planting in that spot that you just identified, whether you're like you have a date or whether it's just where you live or whatever it is, but if you had to have so much money and you had to have a huge team and you needed to have a huge space, how do those things feed into the challenges? And so there are more challenges, but could you, again, you don't have much time, but could you share just a little bit about the challenges, why a blacked out map is part of your world? Go ahead and share as tables. As tables, go ahead and share. Go! All right. So today the goal is to get our minds working, and so it's not to necessarily bring these conversations to completion. We're going to work our way through this sheet here. What are some other things that churches do? What are some things, so churches do, like there's worship, small groups, Sunday school, youth, there is probably a Sunday service, probably.
At home.
What is that? What else, what other than this list, is there anything else? What do churches do? Any time. What are some things that churches are on their calendars or things that they, like, do?
Preach.
Well, okay, preaching.
Potlucks.
Pots.
Youth outreach.
Youth outreach.
Baptism.
Oh, no.
Baptism.
Communion.
Bible studies.
Yep. Okay.
Fellowship.
Good. One more. Well, there was a, what was it?
Fellowship,
that was it.
School.
There was, what, well, counseling. I heard you.
You're stubborn, right?
All right, okay, so, now, if, think about this. I want you, like, this is, ready. Let your brains go a little bit with this. Ready? Like, a church. Like this church, probably if you just say, all right, bring their staff together and some people that come to church here and go, all right, what do you guys do? You have all morning to come up with all the things you do. They probably wouldn't even come to the end of it, right? There are so many things that churches do that just happen that nobody even thinks or knows. It just happens. So I want you to just think about this. All right. Is it still a church?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. No board meetings. Is it still a church?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay. All right. All right. No. Youth group? Okay. So, all right. I want you, the combination of the do and define, this is real stuff here, that denominations, there's a place in Springfield, Missouri. They get a little twitchy if you go, what really is a church? And so, ready? Now, there are people that are brilliant that have given lots of time that go, boy, this is really complicated. So you're going to have like 3 minutes to figure it out. Feel the sarcasm in that, okay? But I want you to work as a table. You can work a little bit as an individual. Write on your sheet because this is about getting your brain going. But what are the things that a church has to do? When does it become not a church? So there are a couple of things that you, again, nobody should have to tell you this, because if they tell you, they might be missing it. And what might be right for one person might be wrong for another church. If you take this infrastructure, this place, this church, and you'd say, you know what, no more Sunday gatherings, maybe this would cease to become a church. But maybe your church doesn't need a Sunday gathering. So for you, what needs to be on the list? What is the do? And that's good. I'm going to give you, you're going to start writing. What define, what in the world is a church? So ready? I'm going to start this beautiful music again. You got just like 3 or 4 minutes here. What does a church have to do? And how does that feed into what defining what a church is? Work as a table. Talk this out. Process on your own. Okay. Let's room talk for a moment. And so I heard two different tables this was said, is that I wonder where this is going, I wonder where he's going. Just so you know, the question for you, my goal is not to go anywhere. My goal is to just nudge you to go. You got to think this through. I grew up at Gethsemane Lutheran Church in Upsala, Minnesota. What is a church? Well, a church is a building that was built before Jesus. As a kid, that's what I thought. It really wasn't that old. It was probably 110 years old, the building. It had a steeple with a bell in it, wooden pews. It was hot in the summer and hot in the winter. There was a couple of Sunday school rooms and a church office and a mimeograph machine. Church. Church. Defined. Done. Church. So, feel this. This is not a moment where we're going to go, well, I don't know about that answer. I want you to answer with confidence. What does a church need to do? What does a church need to do?
Gather.
Okay, gather. Okay, what else does a church need to do?
Nothing.
Okay, speak the word. Nothing? Okay, yep. What else?
It's the have to do part.
It's the rules.
Ah, okay. That's good. You're feeling this now. You're getting this. Okay, so what else can a church do?
Everything.
Oh.
Everything. There's nothing a church can't
do. Okay, well, let me focus this a little bit more. If it's about doing nothing and everything, when does something become a church? This is the question. When does something become a church?
Are you talking a building, or are you talking?
No,
because the church is people.
Okay, yeah. All right. So this, all right. We can write that down. That's good.
The church is people who have gathered together, committed to do what God would want them to do in their not a program, not a denomination, not a division. It's a gathering together of those that love Christ and want to do his bidding.
Okay, so let me, this is great. So this is beautiful to process. So again, you talk to somebody who lives across this street or somebody who works in this building. They may be different. Communicate that to somebody who has never been, somebody else here, explain what does a church do who's never been to a church before. What does a church do? What does a church do? You talk to lots of people who have no idea. So what do you communicate? What do you say to somebody who's never been to a church? What does a church do?
We tell them, come to this party with food.
Yeah.
And then they hear the gospel and they don't know what they're going to do. They say, come hang out with us. And they usually walk away Christian.
Hang. Gospel, opportunity to change.
Food.
Hang food. Gospel, opportunity to change. So here's the thing, and again, we're not going to bring this to completion, but this is so important as we talk about, when are we going to start talking about microchurch? Well, this is the thing, is that we have opportunity. There's legacy or tradition or whatever church maybe that you grew up in, you're a part of, whatever it is that there's an opportunity now to do some redefining. It's not the building. Me, as a kid, where is the church? I would have said, well, it's on Main Street, the one with the steeple, and the cemetery around it. That's the church. But we are in an opportunity to do microchurch, and it's not the building. Or maybe there isn't a building. There has to be a clear definition. There has to be a clear definition. And so if you would say, we're doing church, so I'm going to put words in your mouth, if that's okay.
Sure.
So we're doing a church for families that are experiencing or have disabilities part of their family. And so I erased it. Gathering. So we gather, but part of our gatherings is chaos. We love it. We do teaching. But instead of having it be, 5 minutes of chaos and 70 minutes of teaching, right? I'm trying to use some fun words here, but we have 70 minutes of chaos and in the midst of it, 5 minutes of chaotic teaching. And you know what? We aren't going to have a building with steeple. This was such a great plan. Every church that was built between the turn of the century, meaning 1900, and about 1980, was split level, right? Nothing like 11 steps to get in. I don't know what, that way they didn't have to dig so deep for their basement or whatever. But so it's not going to be in a building with a bell and some steps. And so here, again, leaning into this is that you in community, with Scripture obviously is our lens, Jesus is our focus, we have to define what church is, not so that just an insider understands it, but so that you can explain it to somebody who's an outsider. Let's talk about struggle and strength for what you know have known as church in your life. What are some of the struggles and strengths? So this is legacy or traditional church. What are some of the struggles and strengths, good at or struggle at? I'm going to give you again a moment as a table to work in this. So this is not micro we're talking about. This is traditional, normal, run-of-the-mill, this church, or the church that maybe you attend. What are some of the things that are struggles and some of the things that are really good at? And so, again, I'll give you about 90 seconds to write on that, then we're going to process. Go. Things that legacy, traditional church is really good at and not so good at. All right, so process a little bit with me. What are some things that are modern playbook? So this is church planting or a established church, but modern playbook meaning it could be the big budget, big box, big team. It could be big building. It could be, what are some of the strengths that come with that? Strengths that come with doing what our modern playbook has been doing.
Branding.
People know what it is. Okay? Yeah, what is it?
Rapid expansion.
Expansion. We have some tools to expand. There's room. Yeah, what else?
Consistent.
Yes. Oh, what an incredible strength consistency is. We have found, yes, also, but I just know that for us and our communities, the five communities that we're in, is that people will think and process, be invited to church, be discipled, be connected with, and may have 2 or 3 years before they would come to like that gathering moment. There's a lot of discipling that's happened before them, but you better still be able to be found, right? Yeah, what else? Strengths.
But then it doesn't practice out like living. It's separated. It's beautiful that it's separated because people can see it's visual.
Yeah.
But then it has its downfall of being like it's a living critical thing, it's a community thing, it's not just a central place, but it's out living.
Yeah. Yeah, there can be an incredible strength. As we know where we meet can be really powerful, but that can be really, really hard wall to climb. That's where you meet, not me meet. What else? Strengths.
I think big churches have big budgets and big givers and big mission and big outreach and big events and big advertising and
yeah.
They can do all the big stuff.
Yep. So if I could, can I just step to the off the cart for just a second and just can I, is this a safe place to vent just for a moment? One thing that micro is really good at that can be a challenge is that, from tied to what you're talking about, is there can be a moment, I love we. We is such a powerful, it's so important in being the body. We are the body of Christ. Now, the body of Christ, as Paul talks about it, every part is so stinking important. But there's a danger in we when, like, you know what? We gave $3.4 million to missions last year. We did it. We did it. And, wow, how did you fit into the we? We did it. We did it. We have this amazing children's ministry. We have 43 small groups. Where do you fit into this? No, we did it. I don't do anything. I'm a dead slug being drugged along. So, and I use nicer words than were in my mind. So, it's just, The thing that's really beautiful about the we in a microchurch is that we is absolutely, you are an essential part of it. And so we're going to do this conversation as, jot these things down. But what is community actually asking for? So not necessarily, there's a couple of groups of Christians that are out here in these windows. There's disconnected, disaffiliated, and disassociated Christians. So disconnected is like, we just moved to this community and we haven't found our church yet. And so we're church shopping. So that's disconnected. Okay. Disaffiliated was like, I used to go to church, but I just haven't gone in a while. COVID happened. I went a couple weeks ago. Wait, nope, that was 2020. So there's disconnected. Disaffiliated is people who just stopped going. And then there's disgruntled. They have been hurt, wounded. They are angry at the church. But they all would have somewhere a capital C Christian in their life, their world. Now, that group, those three groups are really incredible fuel for planting churches because you can explode and grow and not reach anybody. Yeah. 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 Now, those people are radically important. But again, we have our communities across our state are having that population of disconnected, disaffiliated, and disassociated, disgruntled Christians is dropping, is shrinking radically. Not because people are starting to go to church, because people don't have that church story. And so those groups are really, really shrinking. And so traditional church planting, the thing that makes traditional church planting really get scared is because we have this huge budget and we need these disassociated, disconnected, disgruntled people to pay the bills quickly. And so what are people in community asking for from church? What are they wanting? Truth, okay.
Sense of belonging.
It's good. What else? What about Caleb? What are people asking for?
They want miracles and hope, and they want friendship.
Yeah.
They want something to change.
Yeah, something to change.
They want something different than what they're living in right now, and that might not be physical. That's just what they
yeah.
are.
I've got them.
Everybody has issues, and we can't walk in their shoes, so you can't go at them, like they used to call it Bible thumping.
Yeah.
But you can't go at them with, you are a sinner, and you need to
change. No.
Now, that is just so wrong.
Yeah.
But you need to love them, care for them.
Love.
Show them.
Yep. What else? What are people, what are they asking for? Yes.
Appreciation and not feeling condemned.
Right.
Whoa.
Wow. Acceptance.
Yes.
Meaning,
purpose. What is this all for?
Reality of relationships.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yep, I think of that. The real relationship is when you have to move a couch at 9:45 p.m. We have, you have a list of people that will go to happy hour with you, a list of people that will go to a concert with you, a list of people that you see out and about and you love to hang around with and do fun things with. But who are you going to call 9:45 when the couch is delivered and you can't lift it on your own? And people in my world have to pay somebody to be that friend. And that's gutting.
How about move some family into their rental house January 1st?
Yeah. In Miami. It's beautiful.
I do it in Miami.
Okay, one thing that's interesting, I haven't heard of this, is people are asking someplace that's trustworthy. In our communities here in Minneapolis, that what we hear so often is that if only church would be trustworthy.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so, we're going to start doing some smashing together. So, again, when are we going to start talking about microchurch here? I thought we were, this is 101, but in this is, so what potential strengths could a microchurch have? So we talked about the blacked out, talk about the essential of what you do, defining, boy, we left that pretty vague, but that's a lot of homework, and that's the struggles of legacy or traditional church. We've heard what community is asking for. So now, what could a microchurch, really be strong or good at? What is it? Listen, so this, I'm assuming, I don't know what grade this is. This is middle school. So every middle school teacher, you know what a middle school teacher says? I've heard it hundreds of times if I've heard it once. Is that a middle school teacher will say, you know what? The only thing that's better than a class of 24 is a class of 74. Oh, I love me a class of 74. Never. Never, ever. And so here's the thing. Microchurch, you just have this moment and you go, you know, actually, the move of God might actually be smaller. It might actually be like, we're doing it because we're smaller and we're deeply connected. And the room is full of 24 people as opposed to 74.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can do that. And if you're this person, to I was part of that huge crowd, boy, they could care less. Wow. They know my name. They know my story. They've heard my issues. And they still want to hear more, love me, I guess.
Amen.
Yeah. Okay, what else? Microchurch strength. Yes.
Community and accountability.
Wow. Yes. Accountability is the biggest joke ever most of the time.
Yeah.
If you don't really know somebody, yeah, it's good. What else? Strengths.
Agility.
This one first. Agility is great. I love that. You know, so, again, if you would say, we're going to do a big change, and you have all of this money and infrastructure and all this stuff, it's tough. Yep. Yeah.
Invitation.
Tell me more.
It's easier to invite somebody over to your house than it is a big group thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this is a real thing. So I don't know if you've ever big church can do it. Like if you've ever had a moment where you're like, hey, I'm in the choir, or I'm in the program, or I'm my daughter's singing or whatever, you should come. And people, a stranger or not a stranger, but somebody in your community might come to see what they're doing to participate. Family might even come. And then. The thing, the strength of micro is like, I'm not inviting you to come to see this. You know, there's a bunch of professionals doing church and we're there to watch. Ooh, I gotta be careful. Let's get recorded here. But but say, I'm inviting you, you know what? My husband and I, we do church with some friends of mine and I, and I would love for you to come. That's a strength. Any other strengths? Yeah.
People can't hide.
Oh, I love people at it. We, Corner Church, we are really bad at something. Really bad. And that's being a place that people come to and they say, I just need to hide out for a while. We fail at that so intensely. And so sometimes people do need that, but we're never going to be that. People come and are connected. They're known, talked to instantly. What else? Strengths.
You don't need a large budget. It seems like you're always short on volunteers, so micro doesn't take an army
at all. Whoa. Yeah. There's a paradox here, is that you say it doesn't take 100 volunteers to fly the ship, but when you do micro, it actually, like, everybody does something. 100% of people are involved in something, but it doesn't take 100 volunteers. Like, how does that, doesn't make sense, but it happens. And just so you know, hell will be eternity putting up pipe and drape. If you know, you know. Right? I heard it, right? Hell will be Judge Judy on TV and pipe and drape. And so, anyway, you said.
You're not bound by a large budget.
Oh, my goodness. And so if you... Some things have changed. If you want to do a church of 200 people, which means you, like, again, you have about 200 people. You've launched. You've been going a little while, and in this metro, you say, we're going to build a building. There was a time where that wasn't going to be $7 million. But now it is. Property and infrastructure is so expensive. Yeah. Yep. And if you want to give a pastor an ulcer. And just alienate people because you have an ulcer. Yeah, budget.
It's actually really biblical.
Uh-huh. That's the deal.
I mean, Jesus only had 12.
I know. Yeah. I have read the book. It's
yeah.
I am.
The one of the few.
Yeah, that's good.
He sent him on a twos.
Yep. And here's, ready, just because we prepared this earlier. We met last week, as we prepared this. This was, you did it, we landed it. Is that, so if you read the Gospels, Jesus like meets the disciples, and then so early in their interaction, like they were like, they barely knew each other's names. And all of a sudden Jesus is going, hey, I'm sending you out. And so one thing that microchurch strength is that you'd say it's really good at empowering people who are not ready. Just like Jesus did. Just like Jesus did. Okay. Oh, friends, we're gonna turn this ship here. So now I'm gonna give you a moment to work as a table, and then we're gonna talk about it as a room. We have 7 minutes here, but so then how does microchurch take place in your life, in your world? So just feel this. So if just to feel the tension in this, if you said, okay, so God said, and just because we're in this building, but God said, this is Cedar Valley Church. So God said, I'm supposed to plant Cedar Valley Church in Kilkenny. I knew it was kill something. So I'm supposed to brick to brick, stone to stone, person to person, I'm supposed to do this in Kilkenny. And so you couldn't. I mean, God can do it, but really, like, this would be so tough.
Yeah.
It actually may not be right. And it is right. I think it can be right here. But I think that if you said, all right, to gather 6 to 10 people to disciple, to be followers of Christ, to encourage, to be the body. Okay. So, how? I'm going to give you a moment to process how, and then I have a couple last thoughts. So just could you jot down, could you write, could you work together? So how does microchurch, how do you get there? How do you do it? What are you going to do? How do you start? And so again, how is such a powerful loaded word, and I'm trying not to confine it, but go ahead, give you a minute to just process a little bit of how does microchurch happen in your life, your world? Okay. So, again, if I would, it's Microchurch 101. I don't remember your name. You said something earlier.
Stephanie, hello.
Stephanie, you've been, you said nothing, do nothing. No, you said, how did you word that?
No rules.
No rules, there it is.
You don't have a rule that makes you do something.
Now, so feel this a little bit, is that there's a lot of freedom in that, but a lot of people can be absolutely paralyzed in that. Yes. Now, there can be a world that says, so microchurch, I feel like there's something stirring me to do that. And so if you could just tell me what to do, that'd be great. And so let me process a little bit of that, and we're gonna be done in a minute. And so I would say the absolute imperative is you gotta be making disciples. Yeah, you gotta be making disciples. The word discipleship is can have zero meaning, but bring meaning to that and be making disciples. Jesus, I love it. It's so beautiful. Resurrected Jesus. They're on a hike with him. Resurrected Jesus. And it says, some believed and some still doubted. I'm like, what does it take? Then he says the most like Marvel comic phrase ever, all authority on heaven and earth has been given to me. And then his next words were, therefore, go make disciples. And then he left. So go make disciples. Second thing is be in microchurch, you got to be in network. And so what does that mean? We're part of the Assemblies of God is a network, and I'm part of the church launch, church multiplication team for Minnesota, and we're trying to build network for micro churches, part of that. But you got to be a network. The thing that gets a little scary and weird, it's like, hey, we started this house church in my house, and we're not accountable to anybody, and we burn stuff and people in my basement. And so, anyway, gotta be a network. Nobody, I am not above reproach if I'm alone. Gotta be a network. And then lastly, you gotta be continually multiplying. is that the plan of multiplication, the plan of being the house, a house church, is not to, it's us four and we're good. It's us four and it's good. That's, it's fine if it's you four, but be making sure that there's another you four and another you four and another you four. Healthy is going to be making disciples. It's going to be connected in network, and it's going to be continually multiplying. And so, do you have a question?
I do.
Yeah. Somebody's mess?
Yeah, like, it's great that people are messy. We're all messy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how do you help someone that is maybe... Or maybe, like, dominates.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, like, and leads the group in a way.
For sure.
Like, well, then, you know.
Yep. So I'm going to give you the 21-second answer. Okay. The first 4 seconds are that it's very easy to hide unhealthy people in a large room. So they're still here. In a small room, you go, what's happening? And so the answer is that it all has to be talked about as you would talk about it as a family. And so there can be no curtain or behind closed doors in microchurch. And so so if there is a somebody is struggling with addiction or a marriage is falling apart, all this stuff, it's not a moment like, let's hide them in the room. Nope. We have to talk about this as a family.